Sahana bhavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, saha vīryam karavāvahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mā vidviṣāvahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi.
Let's do the 9, 10, and 11. Mm-hmm. Now.
Tat premātmārtamanyatra.
Tat premātmārtamanyatra.
Tat premātmārtamanyatra.
Tat premātmārtamanyatra.
Naivam manyārtamātmani.
Naivam manyartamātmani.
Atastat paramantena.
Atastat paramantena.
Paramānandatātmanah.
Paramānandatātmanah.
Itam satchit parānandah.
Itam satchit parānandah.
Atmā yukhya tathā vidam.
Atma yukhya tathā vidam.
Param brahma tayoshchaikyam.
Param brahma tayoshchaikyam.
Shrutyante shupadishyate.
Shrutyante shupadishyate.
Abhanena param brahma.
Abhanena param brahma. Bhane na vishaye spraha.
Ato bhane pyabhata sau.
Ato bhane pyabhata sau.
Paramanandatmanah.
Paramanandatmanah.
Okay. Verse 9. So, repeat after me. Tat.
Tat.
Prema.
Prema.
Atma.
Atma.
Artam.
Artam.
Anyatra.
Anyatra.
Na.
Na.
Evam.
Evam.
Anya.
Anya.
Artam.
Artam.
Atmani.
Atmani.
Attaha.
Attaha.
Tat paramam.
Tat paramam.
Tena. Parama,
Parama,
Anandata,
Anandata,
Atmanah,
Atmanah.
Okay. So here's another. Another logic. That it is only the nature of yourself that is the most dear, not anything else. Other things seem as the most dear, but actually they're secondary. They're secondary nimittas for you who are the most dear. So this is that particular logic. God, I need my glasses. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it says, this first part, tat prema atma artam anyatra. So you have to add which. Tat prema, that prema, which is anyatra, that love which is for another, the love which you have for another, other than yourself. So that love, which you have for another, is atma artam, is for your own self, is for your own sake. You say, I love this person, or I love my child, or I love my friend, or whatever it might, whatever the love object is. that love object is really for my own sake. The love that I have for another is really for my own sake. So tat prema, that love, anyatra, yet as understood, which is anyatra. Prema, for Sanskrit people, prema governs the locative, so anyatra is anyatra. That tra is an affix that puts it in the locative. Puts anya means another, so anyatra, toward another, because prema, this love or attachment or sneha, this liking or love, is always directed to the locative. So here we would say, tat prema anyatra yed, yet is understood. So that love, which is toward, which is for another, in English you'd say that love that you have for something else, is atma artam, is always for the sake of the self, because I love you because you make me happy, right? So say, there's a beautiful, kind of a long, drawn-out verse in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which is just talking, he's talking to his wife. I forget who the two main characters are in that.
Maitreya.
Maitreya, yeah. What's the, you remember? Anyway, it doesn't matter. The Rishi, his Rishi is telling his wife.
Yajnavalkya.
Okay. Yajnavalkya is telling, is talking to his wife, teaching his wife this knowledge, and he's basically saying, you love your child for the sake of yourself. You love your husband for the sake of yourself. You love your wealth for the sake of yourself. You are the one who is most dear, and all of these things are facilitating your happiness. They're facilitators of your happiness. That's why you love them. If they change their ways and are no longer a facilitator of your happiness, then they are no longer the most dear. You no longer love them because they are not facilitating your own happiness. And so everybody gets offended by this. Because it sounds so narcissistic, you know. I only care about myself. Well, all beings are in love with Ananda. Ananda, that Ananda is like, you know, moths to a flame. You know, and so anything in the creation that facilitates that experience of joy or fullness or completeness becomes very dear to me. But really, it's not that they're not dear to me, but they're dear to me because they make me so happy, you know. And that's why when your partner or your friend or your child and anyone is who's acting out in a negative way, you know, that kind of feeling of love for them is thwarted. It's not that it's gone because it's a familial relationship or a partner or your child. It's not that it's gone, but it's like very frustrating because they're at this moment being a source of my distress, not a source of my happiness. So everything circles. Sometimes we say the whole universe circles around the Ananda of the self. So here this is talking about that. So here it says, that's worth reflecting upon. Don't think you're narcissistic. We're all narcissistic together. Searching after being at home with ourself. You know, we all want the self. It's not that we want the upadis. We want the self. That's the primary desire because that is the source of Ananda. So you love that which makes you happy. So that's how the prema and the prema, the love and the Ananda are related. They're like a pair. They're like a couple. I am in love with, I have prema toward that which gives me Ananda. Right? So the problem is for all Ajnanis, if you have self-knowledge, that is exactly the problem. Is that I love you, you make me so happy. So you become the carrier of Ananda, which is not true. It's never been true, it never will be true, but that's the amazing power of the of avidya, because that superimposition between Ananda and the object of love, you know, is very strong. When I'm with you, you make me so happy, you know. When I have this, I feel so happy. So these are all ananda carriers. They're all the carriers of ananda. And so I love them all, you know. Sometimes when we do this, kind of trying to differentiate the ananda from the object, we try to differentiate the ananda from the object, we have to see how any given object, and you can name any, and it doesn't matter what it is. If there's any object that is a love object for you, it could be an ice cream cone, doesn't matter. You know, I love ice cream. Ben and Jerry's. Cherry Garcia. I used to love Cherry Garcia. Yeah. And they make a vegan one. So, I love ice cream. Let's have some ice cream. You know. It's object of my love. Okay. So, anything can be an object that makes something makes you happy, you know, as long as it does, because you can have another experience where that very object is no longer making you happy, or at that time doesn't make you happy at all. And there are other times when you have no interest in the object whatsoever. So what that really tells us is that object is not a carrier of anything. It just seems to create a condition in me which makes me happy. You know, it makes the condition in me makes me happy. And until I know what is really going on, that ananda is conflated, superimposed upon whatever the object is that is seemingly the cause of the happiness. So that we're quite familiar with, but this is exactly the logic that he's giving here. That love that I have for something other than me, for something else, is for my own sake. I love it because it makes me happy, right? Atma artham is for the sake of the self. So then it says, na evam, not in the reverse. It's not in this manner. It says, anyartam atmani. It never goes like this. The love of myself is for the sake of the other, for the sake of another. Yeah. Like, I love you because you make me happy. But if you switch that around, where I love myself for your sake. We have to think about that for a minute. We don't even know quite what it means. I love myself for the sake of your happiness. You know? What does that mean? How can we bend our mind around that? I love myself for the sake of your happiness. I don't think we would say it like that. It's not that I don't want you all to be happy, but I don't love myself so that you can be happy. But I love you so that I can be happy. Because I find you to be a source of my happiness as long as you are. As long as you are a source of my happiness, I love you. And when that fades away, I either become neutral, you know, or if you become a source of my unhappiness, you know, then I can have a dvesha. I can have a dislike and want to avoid you. This is samsara. This is the crux of samsara. Because we don't even think of samsara around things that we're neutral toward. Or it's, say, the sat-chit. Yeah, this exists, this exists, this exists, this exists. Okay, that's fine. No problem. The whole creation, everything in the creation exists, it is, it is, it is, it is. It all has sat, 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 sat. Even though that's a jnanam too. It's not that there's more than one sat. It's not that there's more than one existence. That being belongs to the swarupa, to the adhishtana. So really there's only one existence. But I don't have to really know that in order to be fine with everybody existing, you know. Or that everyone that exists is known to me. It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. The only time it becomes a problem is when it interferes with, gives me, or takes away my ananda. Like this person unfortunately exists. because they are causing me some pain. You know? So that's, you know, So now I have something to say about the existence of this one person and this one situation over here and this one situation over here and this one situation over here. I could say, like, everybody exists equally. Everybody is known. The Satchit is fine. It doesn't cause any problem. It's all just Ishwara. There's no problem at all. Ananda is the problem. The Satchit Ananda. I am Satchit Ananda. And so I have in the world, and just being a human being, I have experiences of Ananda all the time. You know, not all the time, but enough of the time to know what it means to be happy or whole or complete or full or to have joy or to have a good time or to feel love and feel compassion. This positive spectrum is very much available to me, right? And it's available to me in reference to this astibhati, these things that exist and are known and sometimes have a relationship to my ananda, to my happiness. I mean, the vast majority of objects that exist and are known just to you as an individual, you know, 99% of them or more, maybe 99.99% of the objects that come into your sphere and exist and are known have nothing whatsoever to do with your ananda. They're just whatever they are, they're fine. They do not impact you in any way. But then there are those handful of experiences, literally, maybe two handfuls, you know, that impact you in terms of your sense of well-being. And that is exactly where the samsara comes. The rest of Ishwara is just being Ishwara, it's just doing what it does, just being the Satchit, Namarupa Satchit, consciousness, being Sat. Chit, consciousness, and namarupa, you know, 99.99%. And also, if you spread out a little bit, distant from your immediate group of friends and relations, etc., then the wonder, and the more you spread out, the more the wonder of the universe becomes. Just the unattached ananda of the beauty and the wonder of the universe that starts to come into play. But it's in your close circle where the same, when you say asti bhati, asti means it is, and it is known. It is known. Bhati means it presents itself to you. It's shining. It's shining because of you. It's shining after you, but it is known. The whole universe that in your experience is that. It is no problem except for these few things that for you, because of ajnanam, are carriers of the ananda. The ananda is not a bliss experience, but bliss experiences and experiences of compassion and happiness and joy all resonate with your nature. And so when those beautiful positive spectrum of emotions are invoked by another person, you feel love for that person or that situation. The ananda that you experience translates into your love for the object because of which that ananda is taking place. Right? So it's kind of important to realize the extreme importance of ananda in terms of samsara. You know, your raga dvesha. Raga dvesha means the binding desires which fit into this template. I need this so that I can be happy. That's a raga. That's a binding desire. You know, if it's just I need this or I want this, but my happiness, my well-being, my ananda is not at stake, then that's a non-binding desire. You know, that's the desire, type of desire of a jnani. Because your ananda is never at stake for a jnani, because your ananda is not an object. Does not belong to an object in the creation. So you don't no longer bound by that delusion of or that ignorance, thinking that your sat, your chit, your ananda has any other locus other than just your own being. And so you're free to have desires because they're non-binding desires. So I want this. I want my Ben and Jerry's ice cream. And so I send Edward or somebody out to get it for me. and I get a phone call from the store. And it says, they're out of Ben and Jerry's. And then I say, oh no. Well, what other kind do they have? You know? But I don't become miserable. It doesn't warrant that. No. So that's, even though I would really love to have that Cherry Garcia, you know, it's fine. It's okay. You know, I'm disappointed, but it's okay. Nothing really happens. What's the problem then? You know? Okay, just look for something else, you know. Get some chocolate. That's fine. It's a desire that you can enjoy and have and enjoy it. But you know what? Your day isn't spoiled when you don't get your way. That's a non-binding desire. A binding desire is when your day really is spoiled. Your day is spoiled to you. Your life is spoiled. Your future is spoiled. You know? It's over. Those are binding desires. That's big samsara. Yeah. So really kind of understanding the ananda, where the ananda, how this delusion, how this illusory projection of ananda, how that takes place and the logic around it, so you can see for sure that you understand, like I call the psychodynamics of the whole thing, of the whole illusion, so that you can know for certain, without any doubt whatsoever, that there is no object in the universe, in the entire universe, that can possibly be an ananda carrier for you. It is not possible. So that understanding of what actually happens there, there's just certain logics. And I think which they're touching on in this verse, one of the most important logics, most very convincing logic that the no object really gives you ananda, is this, it's a twofold fact. One is that you can be totally in love, say, well, may have it be a person, but it could be a person, it could be a pet, it could be an object, it could be your house, it could be anything. You are totally in love with something at one time. At another time, you're not in love with that at all. In fact, you can hate it. So we have, in the extreme, I'm so in love with this person, so wildly in love with that person, I'm so blessed. And then another time is, my God, how could I love that person? What was wrong with me? Mm-hmm. And then another time, after you repair both sides of the damage, you know, there's just neutral. It's just a person. Asti bhati. That person is, and that person is known, and that's fine. I'm not in love with that person. I don't hate that person. That person is, and whatever relationship is there is fine. You know? What does that mean, you know? Swamiji uses this one. He uses that story. I told that story before. I'm not going to tell it again. He uses also something similar to ice cream. So we'll just use ice cream. Ice cream, this is Swamiji. Ice cream is my most favorite dessert. I love to have ice cream every night, you know, after dinner, when I'm sitting down to watch the TV. I love to have a big bowl of ice cream. Okay. Now this poor man, the Swami tells, finds out that he has diabetes. Yes. I'm sure to God, this is Swamiji's story, it's not mine. Yes, he has diabetes. Okay. Now that he has diabetes, he can't have ice cream anymore. And so the ice cream that used to be a great source of pleasure for him is now such a source of sorrow, because he's not allowed to have it anymore. And so now this love object is an object of great distress, because he's not allowed to even get near it. without getting very sick. And so after some time, so here we have the great love object to the great, I think actually this is a really nice example. The great love object now, because of the diabetes, becomes an object of real suffering because you're not allowed to have it anymore. And then after you get over all of that, then, you know, you don't care about the ice cream anymore. It's not an object of happiness or suffering. You've gotten over that particular addiction. You know, you don't need it anymore. It is fine. It is fine. But, you know, what does this mean? You know, okay, so that's your situation. Now say, well, do you use the ice cream again? Now say you have at one time loved the object, the ice cream. At another time, it was a great source of sorrow for you, the ice cream. And at another time, you could care less about it. Doesn't make any difference at all. Not at all. That's your situation. Now, what about the other people in the room around the ice cream? You can be saying, oh, I love ice cream so much. And the other person says, you know, that's funny. I've never liked ice cream, you know, especially Ben and Jerry's. Now, I've never had any desire for ice cream. It doesn't do anything for me at all. And another person says, oh, I've never even tried it. I don't even know. I've never cared about it one way or the other. I know people talk about it, but I don't care about it. You know, it's not my thing. Ice cream's not my thing. Person, yeah, I don't even like ice cream. But I would love ice cream. So at the same time, there are people who love it, people who don't like it, and people who are totally indifferent to it. What that means is that the object is definitely, definitely not a carrier of ananda. Something else has to happen in the individual that makes you a lover or hater or indifferent to that object. Because at the same time, so many people feel completely differently about it. And if it was a carrier of ananda, when that carrier walks in the room, boom, you know, everybody becomes happy because happiness has walked into the room. It sounds silly, and we know that isn't true. You know, but individually, that's how we act, because we project that ananda onto the person. We love them, you know. We love them because because of them, I become happy. We don't even think of it like that, but that's the truth of it. I love ice cream because when I eat ice cream, it makes me feel so happy. So I love the ice cream, not for the ice cream. I love the ice cream because it makes me feel so happy. It is the source of my happiness. I wish I had never heard of ice cream in my life. I'm not allowed to have the ice cream. It used to make me so happy, and now it's just a curse for me. It takes away my ananda whenever I think about it, because I know I'm not allowed to have it, you know. And later, I don't know, I used to really love ice cream. I was disappointed it wasn't there. Now that doesn't make any difference at all. So it's not about the object, and whether that's a person or a place or a thing, whether it's your children, oh no, I'm not going to go there. But in the Upanishad, you know, with Yajnavalkya and Maitreya, he does go there. You know, whether it's your husband or your child or your wealth, he's got about 10 different things that he lists through. All of them, your tremendous love are for all of them, are for the sake of yourself. What about myself? For my ananda. For the sake of my ananda. You know? And so you can see the trap in that. It's not true. It's an illusion. But it keeps you so going through the waves of samsara, that the ananda, the dejection, the ananda, the dejection, all about how these work, how all of these players are relating, all the players in the world are affecting my ananda. Because the only thing as an ajnani I know is vritti ananda. All I know is the experience of ananda that comes and goes. That's what I know. And I know that the experience of Ananda comes in certain situations and it goes in other situations. That is my experience. So this experience needs to be totally reframed. We have to look at this experience totally differently. Like, what actually causes my Ananda, this vritti Ananda? What is actually the cause of it? Because it cannot be the object, or the object would be causing Ananda for you all of the time, as long as it was there. You know? And it would also be causing everybody else Ananda all of the time. And that just isn't true, and we all know that is not true, but we don't have any other model, you know, to replace this one, so we basically don't think about it. We just go blindly, blithely about, you know, being stuck on this roller coaster ride of sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha. It's all about Ananda, the whole thing. So what actually happens to me when I have the vritti, when I have vritti Ananda, when I'm feeling happy, you know? What happens when you get what you want, when you fulfill a desire? Just say at that moment, you know, like it's actually priya moda pramoda. It's these different variants of Ananda. Like for me, he got the Ben and Jerry's. He's on his way home. That's the and called anticipatory Ananda. Right? No, honestly, it's in the Shastra. Okay. It's anticipatory Ananda. Now the Ananda, or the Ben and Jerry's, arrives. He's dishing it out. And he serves me a big bowl. And there I am. And I just I'm so happy eating it. That's the experience of that fulfilled desire. Now the desire is fulfilled. I had the participatory, you know, the anticipatory recognition that I was going to get what I wanted. The desire is going, it's going to be fulfilled, barring any unforeseen problem. It will make it to me, and it's over. I'm going to have my Ben and Jerry's. And so now there's a shanti that takes place in my mind in the anticipation of the fulfillment of that desire. Now the desire is fulfilled as I'm eating my Ben and Jerry's. It is fulfilled. And I have such pleasure, such ananda, such beautiful shanti, you know, as I enjoy my Ben and Jerry's. And then after the ice cream is over, I have to make a decision, do I want more or not? I say, no, that's enough. Okay. And then I just have the aftermath of that desire, of the fulfillment of that desire. But what is actually happening? Because Ben and Jerry stands for anything and everything. What is actually happening for me is that when I see that the desire is going to be fulfilled, my mind begins to relax. It begins to become desireless. When your mind, when you have fulfilled the desire or just about to fulfill it and just right after, so we have this little space, I become for that moment desireless. My mind is happy. It doesn't want anything. It doesn't want anything to be different. It is satisfied, desireless. It has shanti. And so all it has, shanti, it has this alam buddhi, means everything is fine. All is well with me. I'm so pleased. You know, all is well. You know. And then, actually, in the understanding of this, at that moment, you're like a jnani, a jivanmukta. Because you have that alam buddhi, I don't want anything else. I'm desireless for that moment. Why? Because the desire has been fulfilled. Now it's going to take you a few moments to have another desire, right? For now, the desire has been fulfilled, and there's yet, it will come later, but there's, you have a little bit of time before the next desire arises, or your worries about that particular object of desire, or your concerns, you know, like, I hope he gave me the biggest bowl. You know, whatever it happens to be, whatever the concerns, I hope there's enough for later. You know, these are all vritti. These are vrittis that come and put ripples in the shanti. But for a moment, no other desire has arisen, no worries about that object of desire being lost or taken away, you know, nothing. So that's an alam buddhi, means your mind is sad, it's perfect, I don't want anything else, it's enough. Everything that kritya krityaha, that which was to be done, has been done, you know. All is well with me. Why? Why is all well with you? Because you have a shantavritti. Because there's nothing there acting as an impediment to your ananda. The state of your mind at the time that you fulfill a desire. Remember, Ben and Jerry's stands for ice cream, stands for absolutely everything that takes you on this roller coaster ride. Every single time you fulfill a desire, there's a shantavritti. So why wouldn't we think, as ajnanis, that fulfilling the desire makes me happy? Because it does. When you fulfill the desire, if you fulfill the desire, then in the fulfillment of that desire, you experience ananda. Because of the shantavritti, not because of the object. The object has nothing to do with it other than you projected the ananda onto the object, you know, and then you go after it. Because you desire it, because you desire the ananda, and that object is now a carrier of the ananda. So you go after the object. If you're lucky, you get the object, and then you get, along with the object, the ananda, you know, that you're supposed to get, because it's a carrier of the ananda, and it works perfectly. Except that it's so finite. It is so finite, and yet every one of us, the whole world, even animals, you know, they would use this as an example in the Brahma Sutras of, say, there's some cows in the field, and you hold up some fresh, you know, grass, and all the cows turn their head, you know, they see and they smell this fresh grass, and they all come, they come over, because they're so excited to see it. The fresh grass is sukha. That is so wonderful. They'll come and they'll get it and they'll take turns chomping away at it. So happy. Right? Ananda. Yeah? But if somebody holds up a stick to those same cows, you know, with any, like that, they'll look and they'll turn around and they'll leave. You know? It's the world. We're all after ananda. We're all chasing in the world after ananda. Having and thinking that it's landed there on these objects, that this is the ananda, this is the ananda, this is the ananda. So there'll be a handful of things in your world that get that projection. And so when you get the thing, you get the ananda. And it makes perfect sense then. I should keep trying to get one that lasts. It becomes disturbing. I get the ananda, I get the ananda, I get the ananda, and it just slips away and slips away and slips away. And at some point you figure out, you know, it's never not going to slip away. You figure that out. But what's important for us now, because as a mumukshu you've kind of figured that out, you know, now you have to really get a hold on the mechanics of what is actually happening here. That the ananda that you experience and the whole gradient of ananda that you experience is due to different qualities of shantavrittis. That's it. And any fulfillment of a desire gives its variant of a shantavritti. You know? Big, big, big desire gives big, big, big shanti. There's a relationship. Big desire fulfilled, big bliss. Little desire fulfilled, little bliss. Little happiness. All different kinds of vrittis, shantavrittis, that resonate with my own nature. And so, of course, everybody experiences this, and we experience it over and over and over. So why, of course, I want to fulfill my desires, you know? And I don't want them to be thwarted, because you know what happens when they're thwarted? In the Bhagavad Gita, the mind goes through a whole process of agitation, beginning with irritation and krodha. And it can go to that irritation, that unhappiness, and that anger, and that frustration can go to any length, any delusional length, until you lose all your viveka. I mean, Shankara, I mean, Krishna takes it all the way to absolute catastrophe, you know, where you don't care about anything. You know, the viveka is totally gone. And so all of the negative spectrum of emotions arise, depending upon how big that disappointment is when you go and get that object of desire. And that's the negative side of the illusion. Both sides, the positive and the negative, both have their unhappiness. And the positive side, the Buddha calls it a dukkha yoni. All these positive experiences of ananda, they're all dukkha yonis. They all give birth to suffering because they go away. And the negative side, the not getting of the desire, gives birth to a lot of suffering because of your tremendous disappointment in not fulfilling that desire. The bigger the desire, the bigger the disappointment. And so we are, that's our samsara. We are caught in this illusion until you realize what is actually going on. That the source of ananda, which you know, because all of us know what it is to feel love or to feel joy or to feel well-being, that well-being or that happiness. It's not that we don't know that. We know that. We just don't really know what the source is. We project the source onto the world, certain objects in the world. But we have to actually know that that source is me, is my being, and the vritti ananda is due to a shanta vritti in the mind which resonates well with my own nature, is not opposed to my nature. So that shanta, those various shanta vrittis, you know, give me the in the mind, in the vrittis in the mind, ananda, the experience of ananda. But I don't know that those temporary experiences of ananda that we get are only, have for their source only the Atma, only myself. Now, say you realize this, you get it, you see that, okay? Then what? Now you know, and once you understand, you have to reflect on it and really, really get it, but now what do you know? You know that the shanta vrittis, you know, are that the objects in the world, your objects of desire in the world, are not necessary for a shanta vritti. You don't need an object in the world to have a shanta vritti, you know. In fact, you just need not to need them. You need not to need them. You need not to need them because you know that they won't give you any ananda, that it's an illusion. And so if you don't need them, then you have, your relationship with the world is the relationship with Ishvara. Because you're not superimposing ananda onto the world so that you can satisfy the desire so that you can have a shanta vritti. It's very cumbersome. There are a lot of steps in that. There's a lot of steps between, you know, the cup and the lip, so to speak. You know, here it is coming, and the handle breaks off the cup. It's very complicated. There's a lot of steps involved in being able to get this object of desire so that your mind can have a shanta vritti, so that you can feel happy, you know. But what about when you realize that actually the object of desire really has nothing to do, that it's not a holder of ananda? It does have something to do with a shanta vritti because you believe it's a holder of ananda. You know, and so then your mind becomes anticipatorily desireless, and then you fulfill the desire, and your mind is, and a big burst of ananda is there, only because of the shanta vritti. So, do you need that object to have a shanta vritti? And I'll just point out something else here that is so interesting. Between desires, when those times in your life when everything is okay, you don't, your mind hasn't split the world up into your objects of desire. It is so nice because you are just walking around in the universe that is not split up into the object of desire and the people who are helping you get that and the people who are maybe being obstructions to you getting that and then all the other people who don't matter. You know, the world hasn't split up like that. You are just have an equipoise, you know, because it's like breathing, being able to breathe for the time being, all is well with me. You know, that projection is not taking place. Just because life is like that. You don't always have an object of desire. So sometimes you have the relief of not having an object of desire. Okay, that's number one. Number two, what if you know, what if your mind, what if your buddhi knows the source of ananda, has found the source? It's like finding the pot at the end of the rainbow, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. What if your mind, your buddhi, has actually discovered the real source, the true source of ananda, and discovered that to be your own being? You know, which is not suffering from any obstruction. The self is never suffering from any obstruction at all. But the mind can have any amount of tension or stress, you know, most often caused by a desire. So it can have any amount of tension or stress going on there, which as though competes with the ananda. We have ananda competing with different levels of tension and stress in terms of your experience. But what if you know that the source of ananda is the Atma, is the self, and it is changeless? Not only is it changeless, what is the distance between your buddhi and the self? Like, does your buddhi have to say, let's take a trip to the self so that we can dip in some ananda? You know? Now, how do I get there? You know? There is, it's like the poor pot saying, let me take a trip to the ananda clay, to the clay ananda. Let me take a trip to the clay ananda. Where is it? In fact, as an ajnani, it's exactly what we'd say. Where is it? Mm-hmm. You know? But if you know, if you recognize beyond any doubt that the ananda, if you recognize this, the psychodynamics, what is actually going on, and that the ananda that is you, right, is ever-present, doesn't matter what the vritti is, but when there's a shanta vritti there, then the nature of that shanta vritti is something which resonates totally with your being, and so that's a lovely vritti to have. Also, when you have the negative spectrum of vrittis, which don't resonate with your own nature, it's just very nice to know yourself, because the wholeness of yourself is not covered and is not gone because you've got the negative vrittis, which don't resonate with you, like hatred or agitation or anger or all of these ones that are such strong emotions. They don't resonate with yourself. But what about the ones that do? What do you do when you have a shanta vritti? You don't do anything. Because it's enjoying yourself, you know. If you want to use it in any way, if you want to use that shanta vritti any way, it's good to just use it to meditate with, to meditate on yourself, because it's already in a state of resonance with yourself. So you can just focus on your being. Or you can just appreciate the world as Ishwara, because there's no externalized desire. And so therefore this whole creation is just experienced by you with that mind that is enjoying the ananda of yourself. That's Ishwara. You're then a little Ishwara now in terms of your experience of the world and in terms of the shanti in your mind, because the jiva has not risen its head at that moment. You know, that's, I want that one. You know, that's a little jiva raising its head. So for us as jnanis, as you're starting to really understand this, what do you do when the little jiva raises its head? You know, you say, that's okay. We're not going to go there. We're not going to go there. There's nothing good that comes of it. Just come home. Just come home, you know, and appreciate things as they are. Just bring your mind home. Why? Because there's levels and levels of ajnanam in relationship to what you need to be happy. It is complex. It's not just one or two thoughts. Because the whole samsara that you're suffering from revolves around ananda. And you have a web, a web established, an ananda web, you know, that is externalized. And so it goes subtler and subtler and subtler. So you learn to just bring your mind home to your knowledge. It's not anything about getting rid of an object or getting rid of a person, or getting rid of anything. It's about recognizing the reality so that all beings can be free in your company. All beings can be free because they're not, they can be as they are. Bhagavan can be as he is. You know, all beings are given freedom because you don't need them to be in a particular way so you can be happy. That's a huge gift to the world. You know, one jnani, that's a big gift to the world because everybody is allowed to be, and if you can be helpful, you can be helpful. But you know, it takes a depth of understanding. Vedanta, this knowledge takes a depth of understanding and living with that understanding. And when your mind is acting out in another way, reminding it. Because all different parts of your unconscious are acting out in this way and that way. And it's kind of shocking sometimes. You know? You have to keep bringing it home to this knowledge. So, good. Another successful number of verses we've done. So let's go back to this one. So, the first line we did, Tet premat martam anyatra. So it says, adding the yet, when something else becomes your object of love, that is for the sake of yourself. Right? Becomes an object of love for the sake of yourself. And not the other way around. You do not become an object of love for the sake of another. You don't love yourself for the sake of another. Then it says, therefore, tat paramam. That love, that object of love, that paramam, that what we call that prema is paramam. Is that parama prema, what we would say, that love for the sake of yourself is paramam. I'll explain in a minute. Because the parama anandata of the self. Because the self is the parama ananda. And so therefore, the love that you have for that, for yourself, is supreme. There is no greater love because it is yourself that is the supreme ananda. So now, just one more thing here. When we say parama, translated as supreme, you have to remember what that really means, that parama ananda or para ananda. It means desha kala vastu aparichedaha. It means that it is free from any upadi. Desha, space. Kala, time. Vastu, any type of an object, it's aparichedaha. And so the parama anandata of yourself, the nature of yourself as that ananda, is an ananda which is unembodied. It's not limited in any way. It's not even limited by the universe. And so your love for that limitless nirupadika, that nirupadika atma, that self that has no limitation whatsoever, that parama ananda, which is yourself, has no limitation whatsoever, your love for that is also limitless. That is the highest love. That is the most love you can have. There's nothing that you can love more than ananda itself. In fact, what you do love is ananda itself. It's just when it's superimposed upon an object, that ananda becomes very limited by time and by space and by quality. So that ananda, the prema, the love for that ananda that you experience in the world, that love is limited. Why? Because the object of the love changes and your desires changes. So that love that you experience for an object, you experience it toward the object because that object makes you happy. But it doesn't always make you happy. In fact, the object, say if it stays exactly the same, you change. I used to love that. I don't care about it anymore. So the being in love, the love toward it, is not parama, you know. It's desha, kala, vastu, parichedaha. The love is limited by space and by time and by the person, by the object. And then also the ananda that you experience, of course, that is limited too. Right? So not only is the love for it limited, the ananda is limited because the mind cannot maintain the shantavritti. You don't know that. You think something has changed about this object and so, or whatever. It's always the object's fault. What's really happened is your shantavritti has changed. And now it becomes some source of sorrow. So again, desha, kala, vastu, parichedaha. It's all limited by the upadis. It's limited by time, space, and the object, the relationship between the two. It's continually subject to change. But the love for yourself is not for the self without ajnanam, for the atma, because the atma is parama ananda, because the ananda, that fullness, that wholeness, is desha, kala, vastu, aparichedaha. It is not limited by anything in the maya upadi at all. It's nirupadika. Means it has no upadi. It has no limitation. It's not limited by time. It's not limited by space. It's not limited by object. And your love also is absolutely, you know, free of time and space and objectification, because that love itself is parama. It's parama because there is no upadi there also. There's no upadi in terms of the nature of the self, you know, and the love of the self. The ananda and the love of ananda resolve into what we call ananda, the parama ananda. The ananda and the love of the ananda are, in a sense, one and the same thing. So we'll see that later. Om Tat Sat.
Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.